720 WGN Radio. It's Iridian Fierro, and All Elite Wrestling returns to the Now Arena at Hoffman Estates just in time for the holidays. December 27th, they are bringing their World's End pay-per-view, and it's a pleasure to be joined in studio by an AEW star to talk about it. A man who has 20 plus years of experience in the business, former WWE United States champion and a tag team champion in multiple promotions. He's also a member of the Hurt Syndicate, MVP. Thank you so much for joining me today in studio.
It's an absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. And yes, Tony Khan is giving Chicago a Christmas gift.
Yes.
Yeah, we're World's End at Now Arena, Hoffman Estates, December 27th. And as someone said to me earlier today, what a great Christmas gift for your loved ones.
Yes, really great Christmas gift. Tony does love to frequent Chicago, which I love because I get to go to so many more shows. But I want to talk to you about the Hurt Syndicate.
Please.
You have seen tremendous success in AEW. The fans love the group. They love the song. We Hurt People. I'm all about vibing in the crowd when I go over there. And you guys, have just as a trio, have been so fantastic. Talk to me about what that experience has been like in AEW so far.
Man, we're having a great time. You know, I've said publicly and privately how much I appreciate Tony Khan opening up the doors and bringing the boys together under the AEW banner, because I don't think there's any wrestling fan that would disagree with the statement that the Hurt business was disbanded way too soon. Mm-hmm. And we were never given an explanation for why. We asked many times, and, you know, so when Shelton got released unceremoniously, I was in Bobby's ear every week in catering. Yeah. It's time to go, man. It's time to go. I see the writing on the wall. This place ain't for us. Let's go. Let's get Shelton and go. Yeah. And, Tony brought us in with open arms. And, you know, we've been having a great time. You know, it's Tony Khan is such a great boss to work for. Mm-hmm. You know, he's such a passionate wrestling fan. Yeah. And it's been cool, too, because there's so much younger talent at AEW. And, you know, me, Bobby, and Shelton being elder statesmen in the industry, it's fun to be able to give back a little bit and, you know, share some of our knowledge and experience with, you know, the younger talent that they want to grow and learn. And it's just been a real good environment for that.
It's interesting you say that. You know, you were pushing to, like, all right, I think we've run our course. Let's do something else. And you kind of just knowing, hey, the moment is done. We need to capitalize while this is hot. Yeah. and do something else. So, like, big, big props to you on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the wrestling business. And if you've been a fan for any amount of time, it ebbs and flows. And we've seen, you know, talent who were amazing that for reasons unbeknownst to anyone, you know, got de-pushed or you know, got the rug pulled out from underneath them and with no real explanation why. And it happens all the time. And, it, you know, there's unfortunately nothing you can do about it. But fortunately, you know, between myself, Bobby, and Shelton, you know, we've had some pretty impressive individual careers. Yeah. So to be able to come together like, you know, like the Super Friends and you know, put all of that together and create something that was fresh and new and exciting and relatable to certain people. Because, you know, one thing that – here's an interesting story I'll share with you. During the pandemic, Shelton and I would ride together sometimes. This was during the PC era. And Shelton always dresses well, but athletic wear.
Yeah.
You know, never a suit guy, ever. And I always wore a suit because the MVP character wore a suit. And Bobby just dresses well. He'd always have on a sport coat or a blazer or something, you know. So for Bobby and I, that was just how we dressed as professionals for work. And I told Shelton one day, I'm like, hey, man, why don't you dress up a little bit, man? And he goes, hey, man, you know, so we were going back and forth giving each other a hard time. You know, Shelton and I, we're like brothers. I said at this point, we're like an old married couple. And famously, he said, hey, man, you make your money your way, and I'll make my money my way. And we're like, okay, cool. You know?
All right.
And then I say maybe a week or two later. No, it was Thunderdome era. So it was a little bit later. And now the Hurt business was in effect. And Vince was loved it at the time, and he even said, we can get years out of this, you know? And he was like, you know, Bobby and MVP, you guys always have on nice tailored suits, and Shelton, you got on a nice pair of jeans, ha ha ha. And and Bobby and MVP with the suits, and Shelton with a nice pair of jeans. And Shelton, you know, said, man, I got the point the first time, you know?
Yeah.
And that week when we came home off the road, I got a call from Shelton, and he was at a men's fine clothing store. Yeah. And he asked me to come help him pick out ties and pocket squares. And he had like six suits, you know, made. And a few months after that, we got the Hurt business. We're in full effect. We all got our suits and everything. And, we were at the top of the card doing big things. And I said, hey, Shelton, how are you making your money these days? Mm-hmm. Touche.
Clock them.
So, but it was fun to be able to present ourselves in that way. And, in wrestling, there's always been stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way the business be. You got a cowboy, you need an Indian,
Yeah.
And, you've always had the foreign menace, invader, bad guy. Mm-hmm. And, there's always been racial stereotypes. And we were very happy to be able to be players and to be players in a way that can present ourselves as athletes, as businessmen. Mm-hmm. We don't sing, we don't dance. And, as I say in the Hurt Syndicate song, we ain't down with shucking and jiving.
Yeah.
And that's no shade at anybody else because, hey, make your money however you can. But it was cool that we were afforded an opportunity, and we have been afforded an opportunity to present ourselves as what we are, successful businessmen that enjoy beating people up for money.
And you talked about like the chemistry between you three, but you still go around backstage, maybe sometimes handing out business cards to people who might need help, who knows? And I know you had MJF in, but then he wasn't, and the vibes were just not right when MJF was there. Having that not turn out well, would you still consider adding other people into the Hurt Syndicate?
Yeah, we just picked the wrong guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't a fit. And, I went to bat for him and I made a mistake, mm-hmm. There's the old story about, the snake, you rescued the snake and the snake bit you. You knew it was a snake. That's just the snake's nature. So, we still have our eyes on some young talent. There's some tremendously talented, guys. And we've even talked about, maybe, a woman joining the group at some point, things we've talked about, but there are, let's just say there's some surprises in the future. We're not done yet. We're not just a trio. There's room for a fourth under the proper circumstances.
Okay. Keeping the mystery there. I like it. I appreciate it. I mentioned your experience in the industry, and before you've also been a bodyguard, you've done TED Talks, your most recent one being Real Men Get Help. What inspired you to want to talk about just what you've been through?
Well, what inspired me to do that was having anxiety, panic attacks. I'd never experienced them before. And, I knew people that would talk about suffering from extreme anxiety. And I mocked them. I didn't have any empathy at all because I'd never experienced that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's in your head, you know? And then I had my first panic attack on a flight, and I've flown millions of miles, Never, ever experienced that. But for the first time, I was sweating. My chest was tight. I felt this weird tingling in my arm, all the symptoms of a heart attack. Yeah. But it wasn't a heart attack. And, as I said in my TED Talk, okay, well, when it went away, all right, well, that's done. And somebody said, hey, that sounds like you had a panic attack. I'm like, F-O-H. No, not me. Yeah. And then it happened again. And they were getting worse. And to have that experience where you are physically unable to breathe, and I'm a tough guy, I do jiu-jitsu and martial arts and wrestling, and I've been around the block a few times. I couldn't understand what was happening to me. And a few people suggested that I speak to a mental health care specialist. And fortunately, at AEW, we have mental health care specialists on staff. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to Chris Manzioni. And we talked. And the crazy thing was I asked him to come to my room because I wanted to talk in private. I didn't want anybody to see me talking to him. That weakness, And we talked and I told him about my life. And, I lived a very violent, traumatic life, subjected to these things when I was, a child growing up, my time in prison. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, like you said, being a bodyguard and nightclub work, mm-hmm. I'm no stranger to violence. And when I got done talking, he explained to me that we all have a reservoir for trauma. And like a dam, you have to let some of that out. And if you don't, it'll find a way out. And he said, what I was experiencing was a lifetime of trauma finding its way out. And he said, you, my friend, have a Hoover Dam-sized reservoir. And those words moved me. And he recommended a healthcare professional. And it took a while before I found somebody that worked for me, but it's helped. And I just felt that we, in our society, we just have this thing where men, we're not allowed to be vulnerable. We're not allowed to be weak. You know, we have to be tough. You know, suck it up. You'll be fine. You know, and that's was always my philosophy. But, you know, I felt that it was time in my life. I came to a point where I was comfortable talking about some of the hurtful things that I've experienced, because if with my platform of visibility, if I can inspire some other men, manly men, masculine men, you know, yeah, to go and say, hey, I need a little help, then I just felt it was time for me to do that. And the number of men that have come to me and said, hey, man, thanks for sharing that message. You know, and some of the guys who have privately come to me and said that, you know, they're seeing a therapist now, or they're taking steps to protect their mental health or to deal with, you know, unaddressed trauma in their lives. I just wanted to hopefully inspire some people, because I lost a few friends to suicide through the years. And, you know, as I said on my TED Talk, I can't help but wonder how many of those veterans that have committed suicide, or these, you know, just various people, would still be here if they talked to someone, yeah, if they just took the time to talk to someone and were able to shed the negative stigma that comes with getting help.
Yeah, it's I don't know, just the having to open up about that takes a lot. So for you to even be open and just talk about it in public, it really allows the space for other people to also say, oh, maybe I can do that too. Right. Like, I can also get help and I can change myself for the better.
And, you know, for those that for the people that love you, you know, yeah, because, you know, when you're having various issues, sometimes you take it out on those that you love and you don't even realize it, you know, yeah, or not even that you take it out, but just your disposition. Sometimes you can make the world a better place around you for the people that care about you, you know? Yeah. And I mean, if you're suffering in silence, no one should ever have to do that.
Yeah. I want to talk about how you give back, and you give back your time. I know you would go and talk to juvenile detention centers and speak with at-risk youth. So what would you tell those young men when you would go and talk to them?
That's something that's very important to me, going to, you know, talk to juvenile delinquents and going into prisons and talking to, you know, convicts, because I've been both. I've been a juvenile delinquent and a convict. And what I try to tell the young men before they get to prison, mm-hmm, that, you know, there's time to change. And, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure, especially, you know, when you're a teenager, you know, to be tough, to be cool, to be in. And that ain't it, you know, that ain't it. Especially if you're, you know, starting to go down the criminal path. And, you know, I joke around, I say, you know, all these rappers rap about doing crime, but nobody raps about doing time, you know. And when that point comes, then you can't say I'm sorry. There's no turning back. Now you're going to prison.
Yeah.
And depending on, you know, what crime you committed, you're going to prison for a while. And going to a maximum security prison is one hell of a wake-up call, because it's not a game anymore. And I try to inspire them to change their ways before they get to that point. And the message that I take into prisons for convicts is that the game's not over. Your past doesn't define you. The system is rigged for you to fail.
Yeah.
They want you to fail, because the prison industrial complex is a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't think about it, but one of the things I talked about in my TED Talk, when do I stop being a criminal? We have a social contract that says when you break the law, you go to prison and you, quote unquote, pay your debt to society. But I'm number 190197 forever. to this day, as a convicted felon, I still can't rent an apartment because they do a background check. You know, there are still jobs that, you know, minimum wage jobs that I can't have because I'm a convicted felon. So you go to prison, you do your time, you get out, you can't find a place to live, you can't get a job. What are you supposed to do? Most people go to what they know and they go back to crime because they don't, there aren't a number of choices. And it's not easy. It's not going to be easy. But I tell them, you know, with figure out what it is you want to do and don't let anybody stop you.
Yeah.
You know, you need a laser beam like focus, but you can do it. And I try to hold myself up, not as a role model, but just as a beacon of hope.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't easy, man, but I was able to do it. And everybody's not going to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever your talents are or your passions are, pursue those. And it takes a lot of sacrifice and it takes a lot of dedication. And there's going to be valleys, man. But you can't enjoy the peaks if you don't experience the valleys.
Yeah.
So that's the message I try to take to ex-convicts. And it just means a lot to me when some of those guys get out and hit me up and say, hey, man, I'm doing great. I found a job. You know, I've changed my habits. I'm not doing the things that I used to do. And it's real fulfilling for me.
That's great work. I applaud it. You know, it's amazing that you even take your time to go and also talk to them about how you can get better, how there's things out there that can really change your life for the better. So
yeah, there are programs and there, you know, you got to find them.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go look for them. You got to put the work in, but it's there. And, you know, I just try to encourage them and try to remind them that, your past doesn't define you. This isn't the end.
Yeah, and you have a lot of fans, and I think wrestling has really changed the game when it comes to accessibility because now we have social media and someone could just at you and find you and send you a direct message. If you want to meet a professional wrestler and you have a favorite, chances are you can meet them. There's a lot of meet and greets. There's a lot of conventions. You can go to an indie show. Do you think that access has become a plus in professional wrestling?
I think it's been a plus and a minus.
Mm.
I'm old enough to remember when wrestling was still real,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there was a mystique that came with not having accessibility.
Yeah.
I've talked about it a number of times. When I was growing up, I remember looking at the wrestling magazines and seeing, you know, as Gordon Soley used to say, the Crimson Mask, you know, see these men bloodied and fighting in cages. And I remember even just thinking, who are these men? You know, like, why would you do that? You know, like, what would possess you to go and say, I'm going to fight this guy and, you know, we're going to be bloody. And it was scary to me. I mean, when I was a little kid, I was terrified of Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah.
Terrified, because I really thought this was a madman from Sudan who stabbed people in the head with a fork, you know?
Like,
And now we know he's not really stabbing you with the fork. And, you know, so I think, you know, losing that mystique has kind of taken away a little bit. But it's also opened doors in a way that didn't exist before, because now wrestling is accessible to way more people. And, you know, depending on where you sit, that's good and bad, because in my opinion, there are some people running shows that, in my opinion, shouldn't be running shows, you know. But wrestling is a buffet, and it should be a buffet. You know, you've got some comedy, you've got some deathmatch stuff, you've got some technical wrestling, you've got some high-flying, you know. And I think take what you like, leave what you don't, and the tribalism and toxicity, leave it alone. It's pointless. You know, what are you really accomplishing? You know, and I think that, you know, it's rough because, and I'll give this advice to people who want to be professional wrestlers, you better develop thick skin because social media can be an ugly place. And if you can't take criticism, especially for people you don't know, people say some horrible, nasty, mean things to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I you know, I enjoy it. I get off on it. It's entertaining for me. But, you know, you see a lot of people, especially the younger generation, that are really into social media. And, you know, those comments sting, you know, and then some people really get hurt and they, you know, get into Twitter beefs and whatnot. And
I'm not about that.
Yeah. But the flip part is, too, you know, now when I came up, you didn't have Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and these things. I refuse to call it X. It's always going to be Twitter.
Nobody calls it X, yeah.
And you know, now you can promote yourself and you can put yourself out there and you can be anywhere in the world. And, you know, when you, I used the example earlier today, what is it? LA-based wrestling company that has a battle for Los Angeles. PWG, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. The first time Zack Sabre went there, they knew who he was. They knew all his stuff because social media.
Yeah.
You know, he already had a presence. And now you can build your numbers and you can, you know, show a promoter, hey, if you book me on your show, people are going to pay to see me. And I think that's one of the positives, the pluses of social media. But then the minus is, like I said, it gives a voice to people that probably shouldn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everything, there's a good and a bad.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm talking to Chris Statlander in a little bit, the AEW Women's World Champion.
She's dope.
She's amazing. And yeah. I know you mentioned maybe possibly bringing in a woman to the Hurt Syndicate. Is she maybe someone you would have your eye on? Or I know there's other great women in the roster. I'm thinking Megan Bain. She could possibly
Megasis.
Do. Yes, the
she,
Megasis.
Yes, yes. Yeah. There are some very impressive women on the roster. And, you know, there's, let's just say my eyes are open and I still have business cards.
Okay.
So.
Love that. You might have to print out more. Who knows?
No. Exclusivity.
Okay.
You got to create the demand.
You're right. I love that. I think that AEW has a really, really stacked roster, both male and the women who are there. And back to talking about the fans, I know you have plenty, plenty of fans. Is there anything specific that people bring up when they talk to you and you're like, oh, MVP, I remember when you did this, or, oh man, I love your theme song. I know I brought up the theme song in the beginning, but I loved your WWE theme song as well. It was just so creative. And I know Dusty helped you with that entrance.
Yes.
So is there something in particular that people bring up when they say hi to you?
There are two things, actually three things, that I always hear. It's one of the three. It's either, oh man, you and Matt Hardy were my childhood.
Yeah.
Because during that time of Matt Hardy and I had that frenemies rivalry,
yeah.
the roster was decimated with injuries. And I'm very proud when people say, nah, you and Matt Hardy carried SmackDown during that time.
Yeah.
That's one. Two, the Inferno match with Kane. Yo, that Inferno match where you got set on fire, because that was the first Inferno match where someone was actually set on fire, not just the glove or, you know, those other ones that weren't really that good. The payoff was less than satisfying. But this was the first one due to the technology that had evolved where they could actually paint the flammable liquid on me without killing me. And the third is usually my United States Championship run. A lot of people will come up and be like, no, when I... Or sometimes it'll come up in social media. Someone will post that U.S. championship and they'll say, when you see this title, who do you think of? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, it'll come up in my feed, MVP. So, through that point in my career, I had, you know, three pretty high profile things that brought a lot of joy to people's lives. And I never get tired of hearing it, you know.
You right now have a managerial position and like managing Bobby and Shelton.
I like to say I'm the vocal representative.
Okay. Yeah. Vocal representative. Yes. Would you consider not being a vocal representative and fighting and being a singles competitor in AEW?
Absolutely not. Bobby and Shelton are trying to get me because I'm not officially retired yet.
Yeah.
I haven't hung the boots up yet. And I promised Bobby and Shelton that I won't retire until the syndicate ends. Mm. And because I'll always lace up the boots to be the third man when they need me. And we recently challenged for the trios titles.
Yeah.
And Bobby and Shelton have been trying to get me to come back on full time so that we can capture the trios titles. And I won't lie. I mean, it intrigues me a little bit, you know, to think about, you know, me and my buddies having a championship run together. But at this stage of my career, falling down hurts a lot more than it used to.
Sure.
You know? And, you know, I got the best job in the world. My friends beat people up and I talk about it. I just watch Bobby and Shelton toss people around and then I talk about it and we get paid a lot of money to do it. And I kind of like that right now.
In your 20-plus years of wrestling experience, I'm sure you've gotten your fair share of advice. Is there advice that you've gotten that's the worst out of all of them that you would absolutely not recommend? Yeah.
The worst advice I got. I think the worst advice that I ever got, and it was early in my career, and it was from one of the old veterans who had never really done anything and been anywhere, but because he was older than me and had been around, you know, just keep your mouth shut and do what you're told. And, you know, no, absolutely not. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. You know, you got to speak up. You got to, you know, defend yourself, speak up for yourself, hold your presence. You know, now, as The Rock famously said, know your role.
Yeah.
You know, don't get carried away. You know, if but yeah, to say, I remember there was an incident specifically where we were booked on an indie show, and on the way to the show got canceled, but nobody called to tell us.
Oh, okay.
And it was from Miami to Jacksonville, which is about a 5-hour drive. Mm-hmm. And I was still very young in the business, but I was furious. How could you be so frivolous with our time? Mm-hmm. And I cut a promo talking about that because he's, well, since I got you guys here, because he had like a little local access TV, you know. And,
yeah.
And I cut a promo talking about that. And him and the two other guys took me in a room and, you know, tried to intimidate me a little bit. And, you know, at this stage of my career, you know, I wouldn't even talk. You know, I said, yeah, well, I'm not you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, I had only been out of prison a short while. So you're not intimidating me. You know, yeah. This ain't my first time away from home, you know.
Yeah.
And funny story, they tried to teach me a lesson.
Oh.
So the next show that I got booked on, and this promoter didn't put cards out in advance, just to show you how raggedy his show was. He would just look around the locker room and see who showed up, and then he would just make matches.
Oh. Okay.
And yeah, it was at like a recreation center kind of thing. And all of my buddies from wrestling school had matches. I didn't have a match yet. And I could see the promoter and these old vets who had never been anywhere, had done anything, whispering conspiratorially. And there was a tag team called the Ebony something or another. I can't even remember that. The Ebony Brothers or the Ebony. And they were known for being stiff and heavy-handed. And I found out that I was in a handicap match against both of them. That's cool. It's all right. Like, the Ebony Playboys.
Okay.
The Ebony Playboys. And they both wore white singlets and they wore white masks. But one was light-complected and one was dark-complected. But they used to try to do the assassins thing where they would switch. I'm like, what? This is idiocy. Like, the ref can't tell, you know? But the one guy, his name was Puckwood. And he sat down and he said, well, what do you want to do today? The correct answer, whatever you'd like to do, sir. Mm-hmm. Well, what can you do? I said, well, Alex G trained me, and you know Alex G, so he can vouch. I'm capable, whatever you need me to do. He said, we just going to brawl. How about that? I said, okay, fine. Let's brawl.
With me.
Sure. He said, all right, well, you better hit me because I'm going to hit you. And I was like, okay. And at the time, I was like 27, 28. I'm like 260, jacked. I'm on the gas, you know, and I can handle myself. And I'll never forget, we got out there, and I was, you know, the good guy, baby face, and I was, you know, slapping hands with the kids, and he blindsided me so hard that I saw stars. And he kicked me in the stomach with the point of his toe and, like, really beat me down.
Yeah.
And then he got in the ring, and he was walking around peacocking, and, you know, you a playboy, you nothing. You a playboy, you nothing. And I said, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
So I told one of the little kids, hey, watch out, let me get this chair. And it wasn't the folding chairs, you know, like the plastic school chairs with the stainless steel legs.
Yeah.
I said, watch out, kid, let me get this chair. Yeah. And I got that chair, and I hit him right in his head with that chair and busted his head open. And you could see through his white mask this little spot of red that was growing from a quarter to a saucer to a dinner plate, you know. And I started, in a working fashion, beating his ass. And he was like, hey, settle down, young blood. Settle down, young blood. I said, no, hit me. You want to, I'm going to hit you, right? And I said, we working or we fighting? Oh, we working, young blood. We working. I said, okay. Then he tagged his partner in, and his partner was like kid gloves, nice and easy, and easy, you know. And then he said, all right, we're going home now. And they did this thing where they would put a metal plate under the mask and do a headbutt to cheat. Well, why would that only hurt me? Yeah. Wouldn't that hurt both of us? So just to make a point, when he hit me with the headbutt, I did the boss man cell into the ropes and bounced back to him. And he said, come on, we're going home, young blood. You know, this is the finish. And he hit me again, and I bounced back. I made him hit me three times with his finish before I went down. And I still kicked out, like, right at three, you know. And I was ready to fight when we got in the locker room, because that's what I thought was going to happen. When we got back, man, young blood, you good, man. How come y'all ain't tell me how good he was? Man, you good, man. You good, you know. And I remember that thinking, okay, all right, this is how the business goes. You know, they'll test you if you let them. But that's one of those situations where you got to defend yourself. You got to stand up. And the business isn't that way so much anymore. But at that time, coming in, that's how it was. Guys would test you. They would see what you were about. And that was one situation where, no, I wasn't going to keep my mouth shut. Because you guys, you were wrong. And I'm going to stand up for myself. So that was the worst advice I ever got.
Well, MVP, thank you so much for joining me today. We have the AEW pay-per-view coming to Hoffman Estates at the Now Arena. What can our fans expect when they go to the show?
Excitement, energy. Listen, I say all the time, if you have never been to a live wrestling show, you don't realize how exciting it is. And I tell people all the time, even if you don't like wrestling, I've met people who go, I don't really like wrestling, but they went to an indie show or they went to a live show and they got a chance to actually experience it where you can see the sweat fly. You can feel the impact. You can watch people defy gravity and with no cables, no strings. You know, you watch a guy like Ricochet or Will Ospreay do the things that they do. It's absolutely insane, you know. And the energy level, especially in a place here like Chicago. Chicago, I've been saying it all day, and not just because I'm in Chicago, because I believe it to be true, is one of, if not the best wrestling city in the world. Yeah. The fans here are so passionate and so loud and so educated, you know, that, you know, the experience of going to a live show and feeling that buzz and energy and getting with the crowd where everybody's chanting together or singing, we heard people. It's an experience like no other sport can give you, no other form of entertainment can give you that kind of experience and that adrenaline rush. So if, and I strongly suggest that you do, whoever you might be, get a couple tickets, spend a little money, try to get close so maybe you can get some of that sweat on you. You know, and experience it. And like I said, it's Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy Chinookah. Have Merry Christmas. Kwanzaa, whatever it is. It's a great stocking stuffer. Take a friend who's never been. Say, hey, come on, let's go do this really cool thing. And enjoy it, because it's one of the few entertainment experiences that will absolutely, you'll find exhilarating.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. I'm so excited to watch you guys hurt people when we go to the Now Arena. So I'm ready for that. I'm Meridian Fierro. If you enjoyed this conversation, head over to our sports tab on WGNradio.com and click wrestling for more wrestling interviews. Stay tuned for more on WGN Radio 720. Stay here.